G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White, good morning.
And a very good morning to you, Daniel Harford, on this Wednesday morning. And how are you today?
I'm well. I'm okay, that's thanks. Good. What about yourself?
Just having a few computer issues here at the moment, but okay. But apart from that, I'm going fine. As you know, I'm not very good at technology, but when the technology, which doesn't need to be sophisticated, just need to be able to get the internet working, when that's not working, it's a bit frustrating, you know? It just...
There is nothing worse anyway. These days than connection failures or connection problems when you're trying to work. Now, we had a big one yesterday. Microsoft went down or something yesterday. Is that what I read yesterday?
Yeah, it did, apparently.
Some big problem with Microsoft?
Yeah. Yes, it's sort of... Microsoft Teams and all this sort of stuff that people have. At the moment, I've got that wheelie, coloured wheelie thing that keeps spinning around and around. And I can't get anything to load.
It's the wheel of
death. And it's frustrating the hell out of me. And everything's slow. And ever since this thing upgraded overnight automatically at the start of this week, I've had these problems. And it's I'm bordering on throwing the toys out of the cot, but I'm not quite there yet.
Oh, no. That's not what we're after.
Anyway, would you like to start today?
Well, I'm going to start back. I'm going to go back. And there's an SMS that's just reminded me. And I was supposed to do this on Monday, but for whatever reason... we got sidetracked, and I didn't get a chance to do it. But we wanted to celebrate the awesomeness of our man and our woman, in fact, in the world of athletics. Stewie McSwain, we spoke to him, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? It wasn't long ago.
No, 2 weeks ago, I think. Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
He's getting ready to go to Doha for the Diamond League event, did Stewie. He's an athletics performer, one of Australia's finest athletics performers, the boy from King Island, the King of King Island, we called him, or he might have called himself, I'm not quite sure. He's done it again. He did it again. He broke the 3,000-metre record that Buster Mottram had for Australia for a long, long time. And on the weekend in the Diamond League event in Doha, he broke the 1,500-metre record as well, 3 minutes 30.51 seconds. So, and he won the meet. As well, so it's even better. So Stewie not only won't break the 3,000 metre, now owns the 1,500 metre record as well, and 3 minutes 30.51 seconds. So let's break that down for a second. So that's 2 minutes 20 for the first K, and then a minute 10 if you go at the same pace. Go and try and run a 1K in 2 minutes 20 today at some stage. Good luck to you, just by the way. But go and try.
That won't be happening in my life.
Go and try and do that. So well done to Stewie. He's on top of the world at the moment. He's absolutely humming. And the other one is Jess Hull, who we spoke to about a month ago.
Yeah.
Now, Jess ran 8 minutes 36.03 in the women's 3,000 metres in the Diamond League at Doha. Now, that sounds pretty good. But it's even better because she shaved 32 seconds off her PB. Now, that's an extraordinary amount of time to be breaking off a PB. I don't care what level of sport you're at. That percentage of improvement from your personal best is nothing short of out of this world.
I agree. I mean, that is a massive amount of time. And, you know, we talked about, when we talked to her, was it last week or the week before? We're talking about the fact that was she just swept up in a really fast time? Or was it a situation where she's just running really fast? And, you know, it's probably a combination of both things. But to have one of our key male athletes and one of our key female athletes both flying at the moment in these, in similar sort of, you know, distance races, it's fantastic. It's almost like they're pushing each other on.
Well, she's become the first Aussie woman to simultaneously hold the 1,500, the 3,000 and the 5,000 metre national records. So it's quite a feat for Jess Hull, and she's part of the family here on the Breakfast Club. So we're very excited for those two that we've been able to touch base with of recent times, and now they've gone on to even better and bigger things. And this is the Diamond League, so this isn't the Box Hill Interclub. This is it's not the Box Hill Inter Club at that field just off Middleburg Road there. That's not where they're running. This is the world stage. Diamond League meets are the ones all the big athletes go around to because that's where you can make some cash as well. There's some cash given to good performances. Mm. So well done to Jess and well done to Stewie. We don't get a lot of athletics action here on the Breakfast Club because it's hard to keep track of, I must admit. But well done. Great work. And what was going to be an Olympic year for those two, hopefully this is the sign of a great build-up to the Olympic year next year in Tokyo.
We've got a situation at the moment where Mark Stevens is on the way to the airport from... he's in Brisbane, and he's going to be flying to Adelaide for the final tomorrow night between Geelong and Port Adelaide. And he had... Yeah, that's him. That's him. I want to get him on. I want to get him on the program ASAP. Oh. Because he broke a fairly significant story last night on the Twitter world. He's suggesting that Adam Saad is going to stay at Essendon.
Oh, is
so, he? Yeah, so I wouldn't mind talking to Steve-O just to explain a little bit more about that as to why that he has gone with that story, because I think it's been a bit of a rollercoaster ride the last couple of weeks. You know, Essendon were confident he'd stay, then they were worried he'd go. There was speculation that the Blues had a couple of meetings with Adam Saad, North Melbourne, all sorts of people were interested in talking to him, and maybe they did talk to him, but now the feeling is that he might be heading back towards staying at Essendon. So it'll be interesting to see what Steve-O's got to say about the matter.
Well, I wasn't aware of that story. I must have missed that last night, and I don't know how I've missed that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get him on the line right now. He's right there. He's got him on the line. Mark Stevens from Channel 7, the main man and RSN's chief football reporter. Steve-O, good morning.
Morning, Hart. Morning, Whitey. I'm just on the Bruce Highway on the way to the airport heading to Adelaide. So hopefully I can get in the border and then hop back to Queensland for the grand final.
Well, that would, yeah, no point going and being in a hub for 6 months and not being able to get to the grand final, Steve. I hope you've sorted this out.
No, and of course the Bulldogs play Saturday, so we need to get back in time. But yeah, the big story, half really, from a trade perspective, is involving Adam Saad. Of course, it was heavily reported that Essendon only offering 4 years, Carlton 5. I can confirm that Essendon's now upped that offer to 5 years, which is a massive show of faith in Adam Saad as a 26-year-old. And the money now is virtually, well, very close to what it is on offer at Carlton and other clubs. So Adam Saad now has a decision to make between Essendon Footy Club and the others, not based on money or length of term, but based on where he's the happiest. And you would think, just from reading between the lines, that he's now likely to stay, as you think you would, given Essendon have done so much for him, now prepared to offer a five-year deal.
Okay, so now it is a true measure of what Adam thinks of the football club and their direction as opposed to another year or the cash that might have been on offer from somewhere else. This is more about his relationship now with the Essendon Football Club, full stop.
Absolutely, half. Usually it's for a longer term or more money people leave. Now it's line ball. And, if he does leave, then that'll be a slap on the Essendon Football Club, of course. But I think he's more likely now to stay. You could look at it another way and say perhaps it's a Hail Mary by Essendon, thinking, well, he's probably halfway out the door, we'll throw this at him now. But you'd think you'd be more positive now as an Essendon person that he would stay with 5 years. But what do you think of 5 years for Adam Saad? It's a long term, isn't it? I mean, he's a very durable player, but 5 years is normally really the top echelon, a key position player or a ruckman right up in the A-grade level.
Yeah, it is, and I think a lot of clubs, Steve, have been caught with players in long-term deals that haven't quite worked out the way that they would have liked, and it's become an issue. So I still think that a five-year deal is too long, full stop, for everyone, for the club and for the player. I just don't think much good comes out of these long-term deals. 3 years should be the maximum term, as far as I'm concerned. But it is a great show of faith. I mean, he's a very important player for them, so... I would have thought if he wanted to stay, 4 years would have been enough anyway, I must admit. So I'm not sure, you know, obviously it's another year of security, but I'm not sure that it would be the make or break if he's got to the point where there's 4 years on the table, and I'm sure it was decent money, maybe not Carlton money with that extra year, but 4 years at the footy club where you are, where you're comfortable, if you didn't want to leave, I don't know why you'd be entertaining an offer of, even if it was 5 years, anywhere else. So I think this is a true test of his relationship, of what he thinks is happening at that football club and whether or not he really wants to be there. That's why I'm still a little bit sceptical, I must admit, that there was enough water going to the bridge in the last couple of weeks, Steve-O, that the drums were beating that he was looking to get out, and obviously having some incentive to do so from other clubs. I'm still a little bit sceptical, I must admit.
Yeah, well, it could be, as I said, a little bit of a Hail Mary to try and keep him, but what Essendon have now said, well, we're going to match everything, it's up to you now, and, you know, you're a man of, good morals and a very solid citizen in the world, so a real tough decision now for Adam Saad, because sometimes when you leave, the money's too good, the offer's too good, and people can accept that, but now it's like for like, and it's a huge call for Adam Saad, and we should know. Perhaps in the next 48 hours or so, half.
So what's the cash on offer, Steve-O?
The cash on offer, I think she's around the 6-7.
Okay. Yeah, well, he's a 6-ish sort of player, I would think.
Yeah, I would have thought so, plus the security, but he keeps saying that it's more than money, so we'll just have to wait and see. So, Adrian Dodoro's got a fair bit on his plate at the moment, so he's trying to get everything in line at Essendon Footy Club, half. So, we'll see what unfolds as I head towards the Brisbane Airport. A beautiful day up here in southeast Queensland.
Well, let's see what's going on in the English Premier League this weekend. Russell Milton is our man on the ground across the pond, so to speak, and he's been good enough to join us. Russ, good morning.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey.
Great to have you with us. And I think there's a game currently going on, isn't there, somewhere? Are Tottenham playing at the moment?
Yeah, they are. They're playing Chelsea 1-0 in the EFL Cup at the minute. 1-0 to Chelsea. Timo Werner scored his first goal for Frank Lampard's men. So, pretty mundane affair, to be honest. But both teams have made changes from the Premier League side. Tottenham have got to play again in 48 hours' time in the Europa League qualifiers. So, you know, there's a number of changes. Mourinho's already been moaning about how many games he's got. I think you look at the start of the season and you see how many games he's got, particularly now with the shortened season. You just got to get on with it, haven't you? But, it's 1-0 to Chelsea the last time I looked. So, we'll see how that one ends up, yeah.
Righto. Let's get back. Sorry, Ronnie.
Just on that, sorry. Eric Lamella has just scored for Tottenham. I thought it might have been offside, but it's been given a goal, Russ, so it's 1-1 after 84 minutes. But I must confess, I did think it was going to be taken back.
Are you watching the football?
Of course I am.
Are you watching the football, not concentrating on Russ and I and our audience?
I absolutely am.
Well, Russ, I'm sorry for this.
It is Tottenham. Come on, it is Tottenham. Come on.
It's the AFL Cup, mate. No one cares. I'm sorry for this, Russ. I'm very sorry for my man.
Any sort of victory, Tottenham has got to try and get. He's got to watch
correct.
It. Any sort of chance of success.
Goodness, mate. Goodness, mate. What sort of shop are you running here? Hey, Russ, is it happening again? Are the Foxes in the game to take out the title? I know we're running week three, Russ. But being down 1-0 to Man City away and then putting on 5 to win 5-2 in the end, that's and sit atop the table. This is good business by the Foxes.
I know. They were very good last year, weren't they? Up until the break, for the virus that came and everything shut down, they were very good then. And when they came back after, I think they were third at that time. But and then they ended up fifth. They just dropped out of the Champions League places. But the year started really well. Jamie Vardy scored a hat-trick. I actually turned away for half an hour after City scored, because that could have been 2 or 3 up, Man City, that is. But Leicester, very good. Went there. We're quite defensive, as you would do against Man City. You wouldn't go and be open, because they will tear you apart. But when I look back, it was 5-2. I couldn't believe it. And looking back on the game, you know, Leicester took their chances really well. Jamie Vardy, as I said, a hat-trick. There's some penalties in there. But fully deserved it, and Man City, for once, ran out of ideas and couldn't quite get over the line. But it was a real shock, So, you know, one defeat and one victory for Man City. Leicester top of the league, three wins out of three, 12 goals scored as well, which is, you know, 4 goals a game, brilliant. With Liverpool and Everton just behind them. So Everton have started well as well. So Leicester and Everton, you know, their fans have got to be well happy with their start of the season, 9 points from 9.
Yeah, absolutely. And just being on goals scored, I mean, last week there was 44 goals scored for the weekend, which was a record, I believe. And then there's another 34 or so this weekend. What is this scoring spree? What's happening in the EPL? Is this a change in mindset or tactics? Or how come we're getting so many goals?
It's great, isn't it? I mean, the teams play out from the back a lot. So, you know, the teams are quite spread out. So if you win the ball back early, you know, you can really catch teams on the hop, if you like. The game's quite expansive now. There's a lot more powerful and quick players. And, yeah, you're right, teams are high-pressing as well. So, you know, they're going at teams higher and defending higher up the pitch. If you looked at the Liverpool-Arsenal game last night, Arsenal were playing out from their byline and Liverpool were just going for it, you know. Arsenal got out, to be fair to Arsenal, they did stick at it, got out and they scored their goal for it. But in the end, it told and Liverpool were just too good for them. They ran out 3-1 winners and, you know, Arsenal were second rate, really. But, yeah, there's a lot of high-intensity games. We seem to have a real good a plethora of decent top-class centre-forwards at the minute. You know, and a lot of teams are playing three up front, so there's a lot more attacking. And, I mean, none may continue. You look at the scores this week, we've had a 3-2, a 3-3, a 5-2, a 4-0, a 3-0, a 3-1. And, you know, long may it continue. I'm sure the fans are gutted at the minute. They're not in the stadiums, but, you know, I'm sure they're enjoying it from their armchairs.
I know, because of his time in New York with the US Open, that Craig Gabriel would be mates with Fran Drescher, and he would be all over this.
She may well have been Craig's nanny when Craig was growing up.
Well, that would make him very young. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Horsford.
That is your finest radio moment, Gabriel. Your finest moment. Well done to you. Well done. How old's Fran Drescher?
1957 she was born.
Oh, correct.
How do you know this stuff? She's 63.
Let me tell you, I'm an absolute whiz at all these birthdays. Oh, my goodness gracious me. Let me tell you.
That is very good, Craig. Very good indeed.
My natural voice.
You've been spending way too much time practicing that, because that is way too refined for my liking. But anyway, that's outstanding. The nanny, Fran Drescher, is 63 today. Good mates with Craig there from Flushing in New York. Fantastic work. That's a great opening from you. A great opening. And it's a great opening for us to talk about what's happened overnight in Roland Garros, because we've had a little bit of success from an Aussie perspective, Craig.
Yeah, on one side. I mean, we had two playing today, and we've been left with just one man in the singles, and that's Melbourne's Mark Pullman. I know Paulo pretty well. He's a good guy, good kid, and he plays out of the Kooyong Club. He's 23, 24, and this is the second time he's reached the second round of a major. He did it at the Australian Open this year, and he was saying to me earlier today that, you know, he really didn't think he was going to get a second chance because he lost in the final round of qualifying here in Paris at the French Open, and he got the opportunity to come back in as a lucky loser, and his was the last name drawn.
Oh, wow.
So he got in, and obviously very excited, and it's good for him. It really is. It's well deserved because he works very hard.
And magnificent. 5 of 11 break points. So took advantage when the opportunity arose, put himself in position, and made the most of it. It's a good sign to be able to win that conversion of percentage of break points.
Yeah, look, I think what also would have been of benefit to him is the fact that there weren't the big crowds around. Not that he wouldn't be able to handle it, but it took a bit of that sort of pressure or attention off him, you know, because he was playing a Frenchman, Hugo Humbert. So had there been full stands, he would have been playing his opponent as well as the crowd. So that element was taken out, and I think that certainly helped him. But, you know, even those first two sets, 6-2, 6-2 that he won, those are not straightforward. He really had to work hard for them.
Well,
yeah,
fantastic.
I love
well
those
done.
Stories. Love those stories. Okay. Yeah, love those stories.
What's that worth, the second round, minimum for Mark?
I know first round is €60,000. I think second round might be about 80 or 90,000. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, that's good business for a young man going places. That's fantastic. What about the other Aussies in action? What's happened there?
Yeah, it was unfortunate for Alexei Poprin. He lost in straight sets to Lloyd Harris of South Africa. It was 6-4, 6-4, 7-6. Alexei didn't get a single break point in the match. And that's right. Tough. To find any sort of openings. I mean, he served well, reasonably well himself, but he was hit with 17 aces from Lloyd Harris, and he said he wasn't expecting that. And he was doubly disappointed because this is the first time since his debut at the majors, at the Australian Open in 2018, that he hasn't gone past the first round of one of the big four tournaments. So he was pretty disappointed with that.
Well, let's check in with the world's greatest ever and find out what you think. Sherelle, good morning.
Good morning. An interesting discussion that I think you are having about the Collingwood coach, Rob Wright, not being offered a new contract. It's an interesting one with the Magpies, isn't it? He came in, has been there for 2 years, and as I think you mentioned, Whitey, there's been such a huge turnover in his playing list. A few players out with pregnancy, one with a knee injury, and then through this season, he's lost both the two Brown sisters, who are Aussie Diamonds players. So it's been a really challenging year, and in some ways, you would have to say that there's been some successes, although it hasn't come in the form of wins. I mean, they began the game only a couple of weeks ago against the Melbourne Vixens. Obviously, my team, who finished on top, they were 8-0 up against the Vixens in the first couple of minutes of that game. So, you know, there's been some things that they've done well. It's just been really difficult for that young group to get many wins this year.
So were you surprised, Sherelle, when the announcement came yesterday? I mean, they're 1-13. If you look at purely results, and we always say, well, a lot of people say, it's a results-based industry. And that's what happens when you're the coach. If you don't get the results, these sort of things come your way. 1-13 are clearly challenging circumstances for everyone, but you were 13-1 at the Vixens and a different and more quality squad, I imagine, I suppose. Well, facts are, yes. Were you surprised with the announcement?
It came as a little bit of a surprise, I've got to say. But I guess when, as you say, you look at those numbers and they don't stack up super well with Rob. And he took them to a final series last year. They were knocked out in the elimination final. But, you know, that's not a bad result to take them to a final. And then obviously he's not backed up well with all those personnel changes. So, is it a harsh one? I don't know. I think that there's maybe more to it than just the wins and losses. So I wonder if there was just some disconnect there. I think possibly you could see that happening within the group as the season moved on. So from that front, maybe I'm not surprised.
Collingwood's Chief Executive Mark Anderson White is saying we were unable to meet our expectations.
Yeah. I think there's two things I'd like to say on it. Firstly, which goes against what I said when I thought that the decision was harsh. What was happening a bit too much, where they have these horrific starts or they would have horrific finishes. They just couldn't play four quarters of netball at any point, and it just kept happening. But that is going to happen when you've got a young squad in any sport. But the other thing is, it just hasn't quite worked, this Collingwood netball team now, since it started. There's been a few goes at it, and you know, they've always kind of been up against it in a way because they're from outside the traditional sort of netball space, and they've had a couple of goes at doing it different ways, and it just hasn't quite worked. So, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, often there's the criticism, Sherelle, of the Gold Coast Suns or the Giants, the new teams in the competition, and, you know, you only kind of get so many goes at it before people start to lose a bit of respect. They're in that position now where they, you know, how many goes are they going to get it before they got to get it right when they're coming from outside that traditional environment?
Yeah, and it's such an interesting one, isn't it? When they first created that team, and I think I maybe just heard you mentioning this too, they had so many superstars when they were first created. They attracted a lot of talent, and they just weren't quite able to take those big steps. And, you know, I think it just, along with the Gold Coast Suns and those other new teams, that it takes time to build a culture. That is just the reality of things. Sometimes you can have early success. I'm sure that can happen, but You know, I think that it, along with the Magpies netball side, there's something about it that it just feels like it needs more time to grow.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because the Sunshine Coast Lightning did do well. And it was almost seen that because they sort of linked through the Melbourne Storm, that there was this magic dust that had come from the Storm across to them. And, you know, that they did have the successes, that new team outside the traditional background. I don't know. I find it fascinating because, as you said, when they first came on, they had all those diamonds in the team and they were seen as a bit of a superpower. And it just, for whatever reason, it hasn't worked. So there is suggestions, Half, that Sherelle is going to be sounded out and will be on a shortlist, a coaching shortlist.
Wow, this is exciting.
So this will really put some pressure on a vixen to turn to a magpie.
Oh, boy, yeah, This is a very, very interesting development in the world of netball and the Breakfast Club.
She's serving her apprenticeship, isn't she, Daniel? She's serving her apprenticeship.
Great mentor, Simone McInnes, who's done a great job again with the Vixens, leading them to what's his final call for you this week? Is it the prelim? What do you call it? Second semi.
It's the major semi. Yep.
Straight into the grand final if you win it. Win it this week, which would be great against the Lightning, who you played last week and got over the line. Now, how much, just because I didn't see the game, Sherelle, how much foxing was going on last week? Nothing could change on the ladder. How much manipulation of the positions, of the playing time? How'd you work it last week?
I wouldn't have said there was any foxing, to be completely honest. However, Liz Watson, who is our superstar wing attack, was still on restricted minutes with an ankle injury that she sustained a couple of weeks ago. So she was only able to play a half. We had some youth come in through the defence end as well. So I wouldn't call it foxing, but certainly we were able to, you know, along with Lightning, put on some different combinations, and which were done because we wanted to find something a little bit extra too. It wasn't just for the sake of it. I think both teams probably found out some different things with some new combinations and learnt a bit about how we were going to go about it on the weekend.
Cameron Waters from Tickford Racing, Monster Energy Tickford Racing, who had a very nice weekend at Tailem Bend. We know that Scotty McLaughlin dominated the headlines because he lapped up the title for the third year in a row. But Cam had a nice weekend. We want to talk about it. Cam, good morning.
Morning, mate. How are you?
Going very well, thank you. Very well indeed. Now, a victory for you in one of the races on the weekend at Tailem Bend. It's been a while coming, mate, from a solo perspective. How did it feel?
Feels awesome, obviously, to get that win. Been a long time since my 2017 win with Richie, but just finally getting it done. Had a really good weekend. Had two thirds, and that win was really, really cool. So good momentum leading into Bathurst.
Yeah, and last year I was going through your results this morning, having a bit of a look at what you did last year, and you had a really good year last year as well. There were six podiums. There was plenty of fourths and fifths last year in the Mustang and the Tickford Racing Monster Energy Carbon. You must be feeling really good about where you're at in terms of not only your team but your abilities inside this Mustang.
Yeah, it's just progressively been getting better and better. I've been learning what the car needs. I've been building a relationship with my engineer Sam Potter, and the team's getting stronger and stronger. So, got a lot of podiums last year, finished pretty well in the championship. We're up to third this year in the championship and got a few more podiums again. So, we knew that win was just around the corner. We just had to nail everything and knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, well, and on the back of that, obviously you have had some really good results but hadn't taken that step for quite a few years to get the win. What changed on the weekend, do you think, that allowed you to get up there?
In motor racing, you need everything to go right. And 2018, we probably didn't have the cars under us. 2019 was a bit of a building year for Tickford. We got the new car, so we're learning a bit with that. And just building on relationships with, my new engineer and stuff last year. So for me, I just felt like everything was starting to come together. We got our heads around the cars. We knew what they needed. My engineer and myself are working really well together, and You know, you can't give up anything in that, you know, in this category, 0.1 or 0.2 of a second could be the difference between being on pole or not even inside the top 10. So getting all those little things done properly, and that's probably the difference, I think.
Yeah, and the car, as you mentioned, obviously, it's important for you to have that really good understanding. Are you happy with where it's at the moment?
Yeah, really happy with where we're at. So this year we've been trying a lot of things to try and find that next little bit, and I think Townsville, we probably found a couple of things, and that's probably carried over to Tail and Bend. It was a bit of a challenge because they're two totally different circuits, so we weren't sure how we're going to go. But we managed to find it by Tail and Bend, you know, number two. Just knowing what the car needs at the right time and taking the right setups to the right track is what it's probably all about.
So, Cameron, you know, you're like Scotty McLaughlin, you drive the Mustang. How much of an advantage is it to drive a car that you know is so good because of, A, what you've been doing, but also what Scotty's been doing? It seems like, you know, everyone wouldn't mind being in one of those.
I guess the Mustang's probably the leader at the moment, which is awesome because, you know, you've got one. It's just unlocking its potential, really, is the challenge for us. So it's good to know that they can do it, that's for sure. It's just more about, you know, our team and our guys putting, you know, our best foot forward and making sure we can unlock its potential.
So, Cameron, do you sort of, on the Thursday or the Friday, do you sort of just wander down to Scotty's garage and just see what he's doing to his Mustang that you could be perhaps doing to yours? Or you're talking to your team all the time and saying, get down and have a look. Just what are they doing?
If I walk in their pits, they'd kick me out pretty quickly. So, you're always doing the sneaky look over their cars if you can. And not just their cars, everyone's cars, just to see, you know, what people are trying to do with their setups. But it is pretty challenging because all the good stuff which you want to see is all under the cars hidden. So
I mean, we're a bit biased because we speak to Scotty a lot on our show here at RSN. But when you see what he's doing, are you in awe of what he's able to do? Is it just the competitive juices, you know, sort of kicking? Go, I've got to be as good as him, or is he just better than everybody else? What's your view on what he's been able to achieve over the last 3 years, particularly?
Oh, I think what he's achieved over the last few years has been really, really good, and his team, they've, you know, come out and they've, like I said before, they've ticked all the boxes and they've made the most of it. And it's a credit to them, to their team, and to Scotty. You know, you need every element working at 100%, and that's what they've done, and that's why they've won the last 3 years. So, it's good when you can beat them because you know that, you know, they've been the benchmark for the last few years.
So you're 26, Cam. You've been in the category now for about 8 years or something it might be, and you've had obviously a win at Sandown 3 years ago in the 500 with a co-driver. You get your first win on the weekend. You're third in the championship. This is the big part. I mean, you're behind Scotty and Jamie Wincup on the championship table at the moment. I mean, it's a huge year, breakout year for you. Do you give yourself the confidence now, or get the confidence now, that you could be a supercar champion in the not-too-distant future?
I think it's been building to that. We all do it to want to win championships and win races. And, I think we're finally getting all the ingredients that we need to be able to do that. You know, one part is having enough speed, and the other part's probably been, consistent enough. And I think the consistency is there. It proves that when we're third in the points. I think just need to find a little bit more speed, which, you know, after the last few rounds, I've probably achieved that too. So hopefully that carries over to next year. But, our focus right now is the big one, the 1,000. So it'll be amazing to be able to win that one.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that, Cameron. Obviously, the last race of the season coming up at Bathurst. It is a massive one. It's a huge one. And does this win give you that confidence that you feel like you need going into this? Do you really feel like you can give that a good shake?
Yeah, 100%. We're going there to win it, and we've got pretty good confidence going there. The car's been really fast. We usually go really well at Bathurst as a team, which is good. And I've got a really good co-driver, Will Davison, as well. So,
Good.
we've ticking all the boxes, what we need to do. But, you know, you get to Bathurst and it can throw absolutely anything at you. So, yeah, we'll get up there and see what we can do, and hopefully we can do enough.
How different is the world of the supercar in the current environment? Are you going to have people there at Bathurst, or is it going to be a bit quieter? What's it like?
There'll be a lot less people. I think they've got 4,000 people a day, I think, which is,
right.
You know, usually we've got 80,000 or something. But, yeah, the main thing is we're still racing, getting through our calendar and our year, which is a good thing. It'll be awesome to have fans back in, you know, full capacity one day, because the atmosphere isn't as good without them. But, in the car, you probably don't know. You can't tell as much of a difference because the cars are so loud and you're just focusing on what you're doing. But more about, you know, when you drive to the track in the morning, walking through to the cars and, you know, no signing sessions and stuff like that. So our days are a lot different, but, hopefully it'll all go back to normal soon.
Caitlin Thwaites. Only a couple we need for the Mighty Melbourne Vixens. She's decided, along with teammate Tegan Phillip, that this is going to be her last year in Super Netball. A bit of a chance to have a rest and recover after an outstanding career in the circle. She's been good enough to join us, the retiring Vixen, this morning. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are going very well, thank you. It's been announced, there's some talk at the start of the year that this might be it for you. How much did you leave it sort of hanging and not being too concrete either way on what might be for this year for you in Super Netball?
Yeah, I think... Like, given the circumstances of everything that we've kind of, all the adversity and everything that's been thrown at us, I've actually probably put off making that decision because I didn't want to have another thing to have to, you know, to deal with and to cope with as well. So it's been something sitting on the back of my mind for a little while. And it's probably made it a little bit confusing for me that I've just been enjoying playing so much this year, and I feel like my body's still holding up, and you know, I still feel like I'm putting out some good netball. So it's it has made me question whether it's the right decision. But yeah, I'm looking forward to you know, the normal life. What is normal life? I don't know.
Well, exactly right. What is normal life? It's interesting to hear you say
it's overrated. It's overrated, Caitlin.
Overrated normal life. I was thinking when I saw the news that you were hanging up the bib, so to speak, at the end of the season, whether or not the whole hub life and COVID environment actually got the better of you. You thought, oh, this is garbage, I'm out. But listening to you there, you've really enjoyed this format of the game.
Yeah, well, it's been incredibly enjoyable, but it's also probably been one of the hardest things I've had to do. To be coming away up here, you know, away from family, away from your support network. We've just had so many challenges along the way, and Sherelle knows the ins and outs of so many of those. But I guess, you know, when you've been doing it for quite a while, it's I mean, the weight of the scales has kind of tipped, and I'm probably prioritising some of those other things in my life and not wanting to be away from family and my partner. And, you know, when COVID happened and we heard we might be coming away into hubs and things like that, I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. And so I've literally just taken it kind of in really small chunks, like a week at a time, couple of weeks at a time. I was unsure whether I was going to be able to get through this, and we can see the end is in sight. And as all of our Melbourne people I know have been doing it incredibly tough as well, I feel like everybody can see the light at the end of the tunnel of Melbourne's situation. And I'm looking forward to getting home.
Yeah, well, we can see the light at the end of the season's tunnel too, Katie, which, as you say, is good to be getting to the end here. One of the things that we have worked really closely together on is your transformation into one of the league's best goal attacks. And anyone who's watched you play knows you as a goal shooter and that really anchoring position back there. I mean, I know the insight into how tough that's been and the work that you've had to put in, but tell us what it's like at this stage of your career, basically learning a completely new position and getting your head around the changes that brings.
Well, I think firstly I had to just realise that the way that I play, I was never going to be able to replicate what a Sherelle McMahon did or what a Tegan Phillip does. Or and so I guess just actually having a bit of smarts about that and not try and be the one that's the speediest on the court and running around like crazy. So just realising what strengths that I have, and some of that is, you know, my size and my height, and so being able to, I guess, learn what the what that position is, and add those, you know, those strengths and try and utilise those strengths that I have, and those differences. So that's been something that I've, at times, you know, maybe you've tried to run around like a headless chook and go, actually, Caitlin, you're not that good at doing it that way. So look, let's pull that back. And yeah, but it's been really enjoyable to have a different challenge this year, and for it to be, you know, for me to continue to keep learning and have, you know, have something. Like, I think it's probably taken the pressure off a little bit because I don't think anybody really expected me to be very good there. So it's I really have found it enjoyable, and I'm loving it. But it's saying that there has been, we had a, what was it, a 10-month pre-season or something. We did so much running, and I had to improve my fitness a lot and the capacity to be able to do it. And there was a game where the first and only game that I've played a full 60 minutes there, I came off and Tegan Phillip just started laughing at me because she was like, now you know what I deal with every single week. And there was just this understanding of, wow, that took a lot of work. It was high intensity, really physical. So, yeah, I've definitely got a whole new level of appreciation for all those goal attacks out there.
So, Caitlin, I've got a question for you, then I've got a question for Sherelle. The question for you is, have you surprised yourself at how well you've done in the change role? And Sherelle, have you been surprised at how well Caitlin's taken to the new opportunity?
I think for me, I've tried to play a little bit on instinct, and also knowing the goal shooter position very well. I have tried to do what I want my goal attack to do.
And so
that's been something that I feel like has probably helped me. But I probably have surprised myself along the way a little bit, to be honest, yeah.
Well, and I mean, in my answer to that question, am I surprised? Possibly surprised at how well she's doing, but what I'm not surprised is how she's tackled the challenge. I mean, I've known Caitlin as a 16-year-old as my opposition, and the way she tackled that challenge. I've known her as a premiership teammate in 2009 and how she approached that and the training that she does. I've seen her play for the Diamonds and have a massive role there. And what I know about Katie is that she throws herself into these challenges, and she has got a brilliant attitude. She's a wonderful teammate and team member, and that is why she's been able to do this, because she's opened her mind and her heart to that challenge, and that's what the team has needed, and so she's taken it on. So I'm not surprised that she's done that, because Katie, I think, you know, what comes through really strongly, and I'm sure it's been nice seeing some of those messages, you've played for a few different teams across in New Zealand, up in Sydney. What is the theme about you, Katie, is when people talk about you, is not just you as an athlete and how great you are on court, but what a great teammate you are off court. So, you know, you should be really proud of that.
Yeah, thanks. It's I think I have, you know, been a part of a lot of different teams and a lot of different communities and the organisations around that, and it's been really nice to hear from so many people that have had, you know, a lot of those people have had a huge impact on my career along the way as well. And yeah, just hearing from a lot of those people, it's brought back a lot of really nice and fond memories for me.
Jaden Short is one of the driving forces from the Richmond back half, and one of the reasons why they are a very, very good team. There's a few of them, but he's one of them. He's been good enough to join us in the build-up to Friday night's qualifying final against Brisbane at the Gabba. Jaden, good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. Now, you know all about this end of the season. You've done this a couple of times before. You know exactly what's required to get to a grand final after a home and away season. Now, it's a slightly different home and away season, of course, this year, but are you going as well as a group as you've been at the end of a home and away season, albeit a shortened one?
I suppose it's sort of hard to tell. Obviously, a different year and stuff, but, yeah, I think, we're doing everything we can to put our best foot forward, and obviously, it's a different year up in the hub at the moment, so sort of hard to tell, but everyone's pretty excited, and, I think we're up for the challenge.
There's been, obviously, a fair bit of commentary about your footy club throughout the year and the ebbs and flows of it, off the field and on the field. How have you coped with being away and living together with your teammates for 4 months, 5 months?
Yeah, obviously, there's a challenge of missing home and stuff like that, but, yeah, we're in a hub, and we've got just us players and staff at our hub, so just to spend every day with, all the boys and all the staff and stuff, it's been pretty special, and this is probably not something we'll ever do again. We've embraced it and just making the most of being here and trying to enjoy everyone's company and enjoy each other's time.
And I know footy's a collision game and sometimes you can't avoid those type of injuries, but you've maintained yourself and got through the season remarkably well. You've played every game, obviously shorter breaks and less training than normal. Have you enjoyed some of the format of it through the season? Do you think it suited your body?
I suppose it's sort of, you don't really prepare yourself for injuries and stuff like that. And last year I missed a fair chunk throughout the middle of the year, but I suppose it's just one of those things that you just got to continue to recover and prepare yourself for each game. And I suppose you get lucky to make it all the way through the season, you're going all right. But I think there's only three players from Richmond who've played every game, so it's a bit challenging. But I suppose there's not much difference in apart from minutes that's been played that's really changed. So for me, it's just about getting up each week and preparing the best I can.
Jaden, you came up against the Lions last year at the same time in the qualifying final. Do you take anything out of that, or is this just so different and completely new that you just leave that completely to the side?
Yeah, I think it's just a different year and obviously new challenges, and they're going well, and we really respect them. So, we're going to have to play our best footy, and I think last year's in the past, and we've got to show up and play well. So just as they want to, and I think it'll be a good game.
Yeah, well, you say that they have been going extremely well this year, and they've generally speaking scored really well. What are the sort of things that you guys, as that back half, kind of think about and look at to try and break that ability to score?
Obviously you don't want them to score too much, do you? So that's obviously something we're going to have to look at. But we have an opposition meeting today, so we'll sort of find out what we need to do in that. They are a good team, and we're going to have to stop them everywhere, not just in the forward half. So, they're going to be challenging, but we're looking forward to it.
What is it about Brisbane or Queensland that you think you play such good footy? I mean, this record goes not just with what you've been able to achieve this year, but particularly against Brisbane, it goes a long way back. Do you know why you play so well, do you think?
I couldn't tell you, to be honest. I suppose it's one of those things we had a thing at the MCG as well, so it's just one of those things. I'm not really sure, I suppose. I think I've only played there about three or four times myself, but I'm not really sure, what those numbers mean or anything like that. But, we try to perform every week, and, it is what it is.
Maybe it's just that you're a really good footy team and you win all the time, regardless of where the game's played. I'm interested in Trent and Jack. Now, obviously, they're the two stars of the show and all that sort of thing, but it does appear that particularly Jack and, I guess, Trent, who's missed a fair bit of footy this year, they're playing really good footy as you go into a final series. How much confidence does that give the rest of the group, knowing that your leaders are hitting top form when it matters most?
Yeah, it does give you confidence. Obviously, they're two amazing players, and we want them playing their best footy. And, we love playing with them, and it just inspires everyone else to play well when your two leaders are playing well. So to have them playing good footy is very important. And, when they're playing good, it's good to watch, and I love playing with them.
There's a bit of a talk around how well you guys are going as a team. Obviously, people are thinking, it's got the same feel or a similar feel that you can go all the way this year. What's it like as opposed to being here in Melbourne and hearing all that noise, being up in the hub? Is there a separation from that, or are you still kind of hearing those things and trying to put them to the side?
Not hearing them as much, I suppose. There's little TV time up here, and I suppose, yeah, you're always just sort of, you know, doing other things, playing table tennis or going for a drive with the boys, so you're not spending as much time in front of the TV listening to the news and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's just maybe a little bit, you're a little bit more distant from it up here, which is not a bad thing. And, yeah, we're sort of keeping each other busy, so we're sort of, our mind's not really on it, I think.
What about the fact that you've got crowds up in Queensland? Obviously not 80,000, 90,000 at the MCG and through a big finals campaign, but the fact that there are actually people there, do you enjoy that more than those empty stadiums that you played in front of at the start of the season?
Yeah, definitely. Always love having fans there. And, you know, a bit of noise there is always good. And I suppose it was a bit eerie when we first started and there was no fans there. But, yeah, we're definitely enjoying playing in front of people, giving some people some excitement. And I suppose, yeah, hearing some cheers in the crowd's always good. So, yeah, it's definitely good to have people in the stands.
Who is the table tennis king? Jaden, you mentioned table tennis before. I'm keen to know who's the who's got the golden paddle.
Oh, I'd say Kane Lambert. He's easily the best at the club.
Right.
Yeah, Liam Baker's got my measure at the moment. But I was all over him early days, but he's improved.
All right, let's get into our RSN Legends series on a Wednesday morning. Continues, and today we head down to Moorabbin. To a gentleman who played 336 games, kicked 718 goals. It was a six-time best and fairest at the Saints, a five-time All-Australian, a captain, a vice-captain amongst that. Lee Matthews Trophy winner in 2004, captain just about forever, a number one draft pick. He's done it all, the rising star. Nick Riewoldt, of course, has that resume attached to his name, and he joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Nick.
Morning, boys. How are you?
We are going very well, thank you. We'll talk about you and all that sort of stuff, but with finals just around the corner, a day away from finals in the AFL, are you got more energy after a compacted AFL season?
Hey, I've got energy to burn at the moment. Being cooped up inside, trying to fend off the my three lunatic thick boys. So getting into the studio, getting into work, you can call it work, talking about footy, that's like a holiday at the moment. So I'm geared up and ready to go for the finals.
Right, eh? Well, you've been out of the game a couple of years now. Do you miss it when it gets to this time of year?
Yeah, this is probably the time that I do miss it. To be honest, I haven't missed the actual playing as much as I thought I was going to, really, which is refreshing to be able to move on and not have that pack sort of all year round. But absolutely, this is the time of year when you want to be playing, and it's been a long time between drinks for St Kilda supporters. So unfortunately, I didn't get to do that in the last 6 years of my career. But this is what you play for. And while it looks a little bit different for all of us, and for those of us that love watching and calling and going to games, it's going to take on an entirely different feel. But for the players, the feeling of anticipation now with the bye and the lead up to this week, that would be real for them, and they just want to get out there.
Yeah, no doubt. Looking forward to seeing what is on show as well for the finals campaign through the AFL. With your story, really, and we know you're a proud Tasmanian and all that sort of stuff, but you moved to the Gold Coast, I think, when you were about 9 years old. How much footy Aussie rules was up there when you were growing up?
So it was clearly pre Brisbane Lions dominance. So there wasn't much, to be honest. I mean, I sort of tell the story that A lot of my friends from school, they probably don't even know what happened to me. I was there 1 minute and gone the next. I'd been drafted, and no one even really that I went to school with knew that I played Aussie rules football. So it was it was around. You had to sort of work to find other people that were interested in the game. But once you found a network, like I went down to Broadbeach Junior Cricket Club to start and played cricket and loved it. And all of a sudden, one day, sort of later in the cricket season, a few of our boys weren't at training. I looked over to the big oval and they were all running around doing a warm-up lap for the start of the footy season. And so that was pretty much sort of how I got reintroduced to footy back up in Queensland after having a few years off after we moved from Tassie. And the game grew. The game grew absolutely while I was a kid up there. But really, once I got drafted and then the Brisbane Lions had their three-peat and I started coming back to the coast, that's when I realised just how much the game had actually taken off up there. And and then obviously supercharged with all the AFL investment and eventually a team.
So I want, Nick, you to share with our listeners the story, because I don't know whether you had a choice as such, but at 15, you're in state squads for cricket. You're clearly a talented young Australian footballer as well. Was it a situation where you had to consciously make a decision as to what way you would go, or was it that footy was always the way you wanted to go?
No, I was a late bloomer with footy, to be honest. So cricket was always the path that I was more likely to go down and was more committed to, really. I was better at cricket. So a late developer, a late bloomer, and then, you know, footy sort of clicked for me around that 16, 17 year, and ultimately the choice was probably made for me in the end. The full stop on my cricket career was we played in a premiership for Southport, and the celebrations got a little bit willing, but I knew the next day I had to drive up to Brisbane to take part in a sort of a possibles, probables squad match for the state under 17 trials, and they were going to pick a side from 22 anyway. Dad came and picked me up from the Southport Footy Club at about 5 a.m. I hadn't been to bed, obviously. Went up, got thrown the new ball, and started by bowling 5 cross seam wides, and that was pretty much it for me. I thought, okay, I reckon I'm a reasonable chance to be drafted. And if you do the maths back then, like this is pre Big Bash and all of those other avenues for cricket. You know, you needed to be in the top 15 in the country if you're going to make a really good career out of cricket. But
yeah,
you know, there were 600 AFL footballers running around, so the maths were pretty easy.
That makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, tell us about the time you were drafted. It was obviously you and Justin Kaczynski. You had the knee injury, which I think a lot of people forget about. So it wasn't necessarily smooth sailing for a number one draft pick.
No, far from it. So just doing a quad stretch in my first pre-season down here, and it was exciting. It was exciting times to come to the Saints. Malcolm Blight had just been announced as the coach. We had a raft of new recruits, Hamill and Gehrig and myself and Justin, through the draft with early picks. And just felt a little pop while I was on a quad stretch. So missed the majority of that first season with, I think I had 3 or 4 knee surgeries that year, just trying to sort out what was happening. In the end, had most of my medial cartilage taken out, which would sort of snowball over the next 20 years to the point that even sort of now it bothers me a little bit. But, yeah, it was frustrating. Cozzy came out and won the Rising Star that year, and living in a house where we were both so competitive, and Cozzy was going off to games every week. I was going off to the swimming pool to do rehab sessions. That was difficult, a little bit frustrating. We like to rub each other's nose in it a little bit, so that that got a bit tense at times. But I think in a way almost a bit of a blessing for me, the fact that it didn't come easy right at the start, and developed some pretty good habits early on with respect to, you know, looking after my body and professionalism, that ended up carrying me through.
Who'd you latch onto? Who were the players that you sort of latched onto to lead you through that charge and give you those habits that you became so well known for?
You had the full variety of options early days down at the Saints. So, you know, we had Spider and Baz and a few of those boys that had those more bad boy type reputations who were great to the young players, you know, who took us under their wing and looked after us and made sure we had a good time. But for me, it was Aaron Hamill. He was the player that I identified pretty early as someone that I wanted to emulate and model myself on, just in terms of the preparation and the way he went about it. So those first few years in the system, he was like a big brother to me. He still is, and he was absolutely critical in just showing me what it was to really train hard and work hard. And he made me realise things about myself that I didn't know I could do, just in terms of how hard you can actually push yourself. So he was a huge influence.
And then you worked out must have worked out pretty quickly that you're able to translate that onto the field. A lot of people can train hard but not be able to translate that onto the field. You were able to do that and break opponents with your work rate. When did you really work out that that was one of your key assets and really exploit opposition on the back of it?
Yeah, it was probably third or fourth year in, I think, when you know, I realised that within games I could go to sort of places that other players couldn't come with me. And it was all about doing things at really high intensity. So it was really once you know, the proper video analysis came into the game, because early on you do your game review, it was all on VHS, so there was no behind the goals, so you couldn't really identify those running patterns, and you know, you'd get on the end of it and you'd mark it, but you'd never really sure how far an opponent was behind or anything like that. So once the introduction of behind the goals footage of proper reviewing tools came in, you could see what really worked for you on review, and it was probably then that I was able to really analyse my own game and identify my own strengths and try and build a really consistent performance model around that.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.